Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, and I'm back again this week to break down what happened on the 90 Day Fiancé, Before the 90 Days, The Couples Tell All. Or did they? It's been an emotional few days with these couples, and today is Halloween, so strange things are a-brewing. Let's get this thing going. Well, we start off and our hostess, Shawn, is radiating on set. She's in a Bethany Frankel skinny girl TM pantsuit and slick lob. She's killing it. She looks great. A season break from those sister wives has done the woman well. Kisses, Shawn. Now, I have to be honest with you, my new best friends. With the exception of Darcy and Jesse and Shawn and Abby, I was completely underwhelmed with this finale. I hate that I'm saying that, but I cannot deny my feelings. Perhaps it's because the season was so good and every episode brought the drama, the cringes, the hairballs, the muggings. There's no way they can top that in a studio. But my heart just wasn't begging for more like it's used to doing. Now, please forgive me, but I cannot bear to recap just for recap's sake. So we've got to just stick to the highlights because none of us deserve to suffer through another pointless hour of time filler. But let's just enjoy these couples for what might be the last time. And let's go in order of appearance and start with Shawn and Abby. Shawn's been having a rough go at it living alone in Springfield, Ohio. And Shawn brightens his day by Skyping Abby in, and we hear that creepy, "Hi, baby," one last time. R.I.P. Thankfully, everyone's okay after the devastating hurricane in Haiti, but it truly doesn't matter because, surprise, Abby is in the Dominican Republic. TLC just needs to have a base office out of the Dominican because we've got Pedro, family Pedro, Luis of Luis and Molly, and now Abby is shacking up there. Shawn asks her why she's been there, and Abby answers that she's been there for 2 months and she's going to remain there until January. So answer the question, why though? Back to that in uno momento. I've got to give it to Shawn because she actually goes pretty hard on the questions in this special. She point blank asks Shawn if he thinks their age difference is strange. Always prepared to dismiss criticism, Shawn says, it's too much for you, but it's not too much for us. Okay, nicely played, male Shawn. Who Abby is as a person makes up for any hindrance. Okay, well now you lost me, buddy. She's a scam artist, and this special did her no favors in changing the public's opinion. And because female Shawn is wearing her Bethany boss bitch pantsuit, now she's going to go for it and asks Abby, "Abby, why do you like older men?" Well, not offended at all because she too is a boss entrepreneurial bitch. Abby answers, "I've always been like this. I'm older in my mind or something." And we find out the oldest man she's dated is Chris, who is 64 years old. Let that just sink in. Chris was 44 when she was born. That is so fucking gross. So why Shawn? Abby has nothing to hide anymore. She has no reason to. If she fucks it up with Shawn, she still has Chris. And if she fucks it up with Chris, she still got Shawn. And we learn for a fact that Abby was in a relationship with Chris when she reached out to Shawn. Chris already had a partner though, and apparently they must have an open relationship. They screw around in each other and it's all cool. And we get some flashbacks where Abby slips up with the producers and says, "I'm looking forward to my relationship with Chris." And they're like, Shawn, not Chris. And then she just looks around, doesn't say sorry, no words. And then that car scene where Abby and Chris are laughing about him being on his best behavior. Now, for a suburban mom like me, seeing Abby actually playing out her scam in real time is thrilling. She's laughing her ass off, but covering her mouth to pretend to cry. It is so fucking obvious, right? Now, Sean needs a new optometrist because he is the only one that doesn't see that she's laughing, doesn't see her huge Cheshire cat grin. He just wants to punch Chris in the face. Abby's still stifling her laugh and just saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry." So Sean, our hostess, is like, "What are you sorry for?" I'm loving that she's calling them out. Well, shit. Abby isn't used to questioning, so she just quickly responds, "Chris was just using me, and I see that now." Well, that makes our night in TJ Maxx, Ross Dress for Less, Dockers upset, and Sean issues a warning. "Chris is in my top five people in the world that I can't stand more than anyone in this world." And then Abby starts doing her laughing, crying thing. And he's like, "He is, baby." Okay, please tweet me. Let's start a Facebook thread. Who are the other four people he can't stand? Two, or is it three, of them have to be ex-wives. Maybe the other one is a PE teacher that de-pantsed him, maybe a former boss. This could be so much fun. Let's do this. Who are the other four people? So then we get to the real dirt. There's some talk about a Netflix password with Abby and Chris, but that's actually old news if you follow this stuff. And even if that were new news, it's not as interesting as what our hostess Sean sniffs out. So the only way to do this is transcription style. Sean, "Was Chris giving you money even when you were in a relationship with Sean?" Abby, "Yes, he was, and I was staying at his condo, but all this is going to be in the past, so I won't accept money." Sean says, "But have you stopped?" And then Abby, "I must say, since a few months yet, but I don't remember the date exactly after I met Sean." So then Sean hostess says, "Where is Chris's condo?" "It's in the Dominican Republic." Sean, "Where are you right now, Abby?" Sorry, you're breaking up, Sean. Hostess, "Where are you right now?" And then Abby says, "Yes, so where I'm talking to you right now is his apartment, yes." So then Sean the hostess looks at male Sean and says, "How do you feel about that?" Now, if you're like me, I'm thinking that this was going to be that moment where TLC teased us in the commercials with the "I'm going to punch him in the face." But no, Sean needs his physical touch from his baby to bring him joy. So he's totally fine with it as long as Chris isn't there. Chris was totally there, right, you guys? We can all agree on that. And Abby says, "Sean, I promise as soon as I get out of this apartment, it will be over. I won't have any relationship with him ever." You believe that? Yeah. Okay, Sean believes it. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. So then TLC just casually drops the footage that Sean proposed while he was in Haiti before. That's some bullshit, TLC. I don't appreciate that. I've given you my heart, my Sunday nights for the past couple months, and now you just drop in this proposal after the fact. Sean does some lame, "I know we've had rough seas, I'm gonna sail those seas with you" analogy. "Will you be my wife?" And Abby laughs, cries yes, and "Oh, don't look at me," because she's laughing. And then our hostess says, "Oh, congrats, how does it feel to have a fiance?" And Abby just can't believe it because he actually wants to marry her. Yeah, none of us can believe that. Lastly, we find out that they're considering the K-1 visa, but they haven't quite gotten to doing all the paperwork yet. And from Sean's Instagram, he says that they are going to be opening a boutique together and they're buying a house. Well, best of luck to you both. You're gonna need it. Now we come back from break and it's Larry and Jenny's big moment. Larry has on a purple big boy shirt with no hat, shining bald head, glistening in the lights. And he remembers his manners that I like to think his best friend, who is an elderly neighbor woman, taught him. And he says to Sean, "Nice to meet you," and shakes her hand. That a boy, Larry. We learn that it's been hard for Lair because he and Jenny really love each other. They video chat 3 hours a day. She watches him while he's at work, while he keeps his phone in his pocket. You know, I hate being in the drive-thru at McDonald's for all of 5 minutes that I'm in it, and Jenny is sitting through a 3-hour shift with Larry. Maybe she really does love him. Or she knows the Happy Meal toys are going to be collectibles one day, and that's how she's going to collect her cash money. So Sean asks Jenny how she feels about Larry, and she says, "He's handsome." And the video's kind of breaking up, and Sean goes, "Did she just say you're dumb?" And Larry just says, "No, she said I'm handsome." God damn it, Larry never gets a break. And then we get to see all these very emotional scenes that they've never shown us before. And you can see how editing truly does shape our opinions. Because you know what? I actually think these two are falling in love. I can't believe I'm saying it. I think Jenny does care about him, and they've grown to know and respect one another. Is it a love affair? Probably not, but it works for them. And one bit of information we find out is that Larry must really love the color purple because he's wearing his purple shirt and his luggage is an ombre set of royal purples. Not a typical choice for the nobleman of 2017, but Larry is Larry. He's happy, he's open to eating pork and maybe even goat now, and he's got no concerns that Jenny still has an active Filipino Cupid profile. Am I naive for thinking that she isn't active on it either? I'm actually proud of Larry that he knows how to fill out forms and mail things using the US Postal Service because he's filed all the papers for the K-1 and they're just waiting for Jenny to come here. Jenny's excited. Larry's excited too. He's continued to work on his Tagalog language, saying, "Bye, love." Oh, Lair. It's been a really good run with you, pal. God damn it, Larry. I'm going to miss you, my little peanut possum pup. Now let's move on to Patrick and Miriam. Was I the only one that could smell the desperation for 15 minutes of fame drifting off Patrick? He's just riding this for as long as he can, isn't he? He's had a chance to play this well, and I think he fell off the beam. No Carrie Strug sticking the landing for you, Patrick. Sean asks him, "What was it like the moment that you found out that a woman you love has a boyfriend?" We got a lot of lip licking and a not so much embarrassed for myself, but that I told the people I love, my daughter, my mother, that she was so special to me, but now I have to focus on me and my daughter's relationship. Okay, Patrick, not exactly what she asked you, but I see why you're deflecting. There's a scene where he comes back and sees his cute little daughter, Italy, and his ex is asking what happened with Miriam. And she said he spent a lot of money to meet someone that has a boyfriend. Now, Patrick loses me here. He says, "We chat every day. It just doesn't make sense." It actually does make sense because she said she is your friend and she has a boyfriend. Is he trying to do a remake of When Harry Met Sally, but this time Harry is a wannabe gymnast DJ? Can we all come to the consensus that Patrick is just trying to make drama with his ex to make her jealous? Because he's telling the women in his life that Miriam is saying, "Patrick, you're such a good man. I would choose you if I didn't have a boyfriend." Not true. Liar, liar, red ripped jeans on fire. No wonder Letty thinks Miriam is a bitch because Patrick is making up stories to make himself feel better. Classic pretend boyfriend girlfriend. Jan Brady did it better. Sean kind of has Patrick's number though because she angles in on the baby mama and insinuates maybe there's some chemistry still there. And Patrick admits that there might be some jealousy. Again, real life, there's nothing to be envious of because he's making it all up. Finally, we get Miriam to Skype in, and damn, she has got some great eyebrows. And Sean tries to crack a joke by saying, "Hi, Miriam, we've got Mr. Option B here." But Miriam is smart, and she says, "He's not Option B, he's my friend, Patrick." God, I love this chick, and she is smart. So smart that when Sean asks her if she thinks she should have told Patrick about her boyfriend, she finally sticks up for herself. "Okay, if you want the truth, we were friends a few months before Paris. He said he wanted to come visit someday. I said okay, but never in my dreams did I think he was coming here for something serious with me," which backs up that friend's statement that we talked about the other day. To which Patrick, high on a self-esteem that I've never been taught or was instilled in me, says, "I think it's more serious. The connection between me and Miriam, it's just beyond a friend." Flashback to the boat, and now Miriam is crying because she truly doesn't want to hurt his feelings. So Sean tries to put it to rest once and for all, thank God, and says, "Patrick thinks he has a chance with you, Miriam." Very matter-of-factly, with no hesitation, Miriam responds, "No, my boyfriend is my priority." And then Patrick says, "I know deep down in your heart, Miriam." Okay, I don't want to get too heated or get into a feminist activism thing right now. However, this is very indicative of what we're seeing in our news lately. The culture of women being told what they're feeling and how they feel about a man, that their feelings are only known to the men who want them to feel that way, that they know women better than they know themselves. Okay, end rant. Sorry, not sorry, but Patrick, you're wrong and you're crossed a line. And with no other possible way to explain herself, Miriam tries to use Patrick's own words to describe her state of being. And she says, "No, sorry, you even said, Patrick, like you are in the friend zone for me, whatever." And she begins to cry. So now it's time to just pile on Miriam, and Letty now comes on. I gotta say it, never thought I would. Letty and I are on a break. I filed for emancipation, and I no longer want her to be my adoptive mother. Miriam and Letty go at each other in the name of my favorite thing, karma, and Letty thinks that karma's a bitch and it's going after Miriam, and that Miriam shouldn't have even been on the internet since she has a boyfriend. There's yelling, and it's hard to follow until Patrick has had his fill of women fighting over him, and he tells his mom that that's not what they came here to do today. And that him assuming Miriam felt some way about him was his own fault, even though he just spent 30 minutes telling Miriam he knows that she has feelings. Okay. So Letty's still fired up and is convinced that Miriam has been playing Patrick because Patrick has been spinning tales for the last few months to everyone else in his life. If he's fabricating this shit on camera, can you even imagine the things he's exaggerating off camera? Miriam's still crying, and she says, "You know what? I'm sad. Everyone is saying I'm not honest. You didn't say the truth to your mom, Patrick. It was just last minute, 2 weeks before Paris, you told me that you had feelings. I'm sorry, I have a boyfriend." Now Letty's pissed, she disconnects, and Miriam is convinced that everyone hates her. Nope, not me. I don't know if I'm in the minority, but I think Patrick showed his true colors and he looks like an attention-hungry wannabe looking for his 15 minutes. Okay, let's go to Courtney and Antonio. Well, Sean wasn't kidding when she said Courtney just got back from Spain, because Courtney truly just stepped off the tarmac. This was right after filming in Spain, because if you see her now, she's gotten her hair fixed and she's cleaned up her look a little bit. And the whopping few days she's been back, she's been catching up with family and friends. And although online dating is risky, Courtney is experienced in it and says it's risky whether it's overseas or local. So why not fly to Europe and shack up with a stranger? Same, same. Oh, what an idiot. So Antonio Skypes in with his typical, "Oh my God, you look so pretty." They're still hot off the romance. I'm putting that in quotes, romance, since it's been like 2 seconds and they're still talking all the time. Thankfully, Courtney wasn't catfished this time like she was twice before. And she says, "I was catfished by 2 Indian men. They were sending naked photos to my family, pretending they were me sometimes. The same thing happened to Antonio too." Again, this has happened to you, so you still fly to Spain? Am I a prude, or maybe I'm overly cautious? I need to know because I have a daughter and I need to start praying like Evelyn's parents if this is the shit that goes down. Now, since there's really nothing to update because there's been no lapse in time, we get lame scenes with Courtney's mom making eggs and they're looking at Antonio's calendar. We do get to see a height discrepancy between Courtney's parents. So there is a possibility that Courtney herself carries a recessive little person gene. I hope we never find out. They talk about how they're continuing to plan on long distance dating, but they've got to work out some trust things. It appears as of lately on Instagram, they're flirting, tagging each other, but basically, he's not that into you. End of novella. Amen. Okay, Paul and Carini. TLC has been reading my diary again because my prayer from yesterday's podcast has been answered. A Portuguese interpreter. Hallelujah. Fast forward through the sizzle reel of Paul's phobias and him packing his gear. I'd love to say I enjoyed it, but at this point, I think TLC has exhausted even the penis sheath. A sentence my mother probably never thought she'd hear her baby daughter say. But now, surprise, we see Paul is actually in Brazil with Carini. Color me shocked, truly. I had seen online that he went to visit her again, but I didn't know that TLC was taping the tell-all during that time. Carini tells the interpreter that she's actually really happy. She thought Paul was never going to be going back, and he came back, so she's very happy. It took a few months, but Paul saved his money. He's working on the language barrier. It was kind of funny to see the flashback of their first meeting by the boat dock, and Paul asking Carini's father to marry his daughter with the finger in the hole. But it's blurred out now. I knew it was stupid, but now the FCC is on this finger in the hole thing. Don't we have bigger fish to fry these days? So Paul tries to tell Sean that usually he does make really good first impressions with parents. I'd love to know how exactly. Does he present them with his parole papers? Or maybe a hairball in good faith that he's going to return their daughter? But Carini tells the interpreter that they're doing a lot better and gesturing is better as well. She is funny, that girl. Now, as a parting gift to us, we get the flashback of Paul scampering up the hill. We see the river of Larry's diarrhea that's made its way from the Philippines to Brazil, and a final flashback of the mugging. Now, what happens in this scene is everything that's wrong with Paul and proof that he will never change. So Paul sees this footage of the mugging for the first time. So what does he do? He walks off, tall white socks with khaki shorts. You know, a laser scanned in on that like a Navy SEAL on a midnight mission. And just as in the moment when he left Carini alone before, he leaves her again in front of a camera crew during a live Skype taping. And everyone is left doing the same thing. Where's Paul? Everyone, is Paul okay? He finally comes back in and says, "Oh, I feel bad. I shouldn't have left her in that environment." Now, Sean, our hostess, seems just as annoyed as us and asks him, probably the first person to ever ask him in his life, "That seems like an extreme reaction, Paul. What made you react that way?" And he has no real answer, only saying, "I wish I could change it, but I can't go back in time." Well, no, Paul, but you can change what you do now. And what you did just now is the same thing, running away and not taking ownership of it. Now, he can't answer, of course, so Sean asks the actual victim here, let's not forget that, she asks Karini, "What was going through your mind when he ran off?" And Karini answers, "He was being dramatic and infantile." Yes! She sounds so much more mature and smarter than him for answering honestly and being straightforward. But since Paul has been taught by his mommy that he never actually does anything wrong, he immediately comes back with, "We all have infantile moments, and that was mine." Guys, I'm not trying to be snarky here, but can you think of something that you have done, let's say past 6 to 9 months, that you can describe yourself as being infantile? As I was taking notes thinking about this, I sat in silence for a good 10 minutes and I came up with nothing, and I'm guessing you too. Now, Sean has an obvious disdain for Paul, like we all do. Maybe he's been being a big baby for production, a diva on demands, because she's not holding back on him, and I was living for it. And without addressing Paul first, as she has been doing, Sean asked Karini what her thoughts were on that pregnancy and STD test. And Karini answers that she was a little annoyed and felt bad that he thought she was pregnant or had some sort of disease. And then she did it. Sean asked the question all of us have been throwing around for months. Karini, did you ask him to take an STD test? And we find out she did, but Paul didn't do it. I was actually stunned and thrilled that she stuck it to this asshole and threw the same question, same thing back on him. Then it got weird because Paul said, I did take it. It was nerve-wracking. I was there with the needle, and remember we looked at the results on the phone? And Karini is giving him the side eye, and it is so obvious that he is lying. There were cameras right there, Paul. You think the camera crew would have missed the shot of him crying and asking for a sucker when he was done? No. His flat Stanley ass was sitting in that waiting room. He is a sociopath and a pathological liar, and I like to think Karini figured it out right in that moment during that taping. Now, at the time they're filming this, he says he's planning on being there for 90 days and they're still figuring out the K-1 stuff. But in the meantime, they're going to be doing this here and there stuff so they can split between families. Recently, we know that this fell apart because Paul caught Karini texting with someone else, right? He doesn't deserve her. Maybe life in America is easier, but she will never be happy here with him. The only question remaining is why Sean didn't ask about the hairball. Or maybe she did and I didn't miss it. Or did Paul pull a Mariah Carey and refuse to answer questions about it? Okay, well, here we are, the last of our before the 90 days couples. It seems like so long ago we met Darcy and watched her get stuck in the escalator. Together, we laughed and laughed and laughed, and now the end is near, and Jesse has instilled a lot of fear. It rhymes, it's cheesy, but it fits. So Darcy and Jesse, Jesse and Darcy. Darcy's back, and she's more blonde. We find out it's been a process, but she's back with the girls, getting back in the swing of things. She feels meeting Jesse was a divine intervention. Really? Well, Darcy, you have no idea what kind of intervention you're going to be getting as soon as your friends and family see this. This quickly turns into a therapy session, which Darcy actually desperately needs. You see, she thinks Jesse is an alpha male, and it's hard for him to take direction because he's younger, and They're just dealing with some stuff that they still need to overcome. There seems to be a huge disagreement as to when Jesse's going to move here and when they are going to see each other again. Darcy prefers sooner rather than later, and Jesse really doesn't give a royal shit. Darcy's sweet daughters are now wrapped up in this mess, so they're asking their mom, when are they going to meet him? Are they going to go there? Is he coming here? So Darcy's just, she's got to get some answers. So we get a scene of her in her car. She calls him up, and immediately the first thing he comments on is her hair looking wavy. Only a woman with naturally wavy hair that straightens it knows that that is not a compliment on a humid or rainy day. He's truly a monster. So she says, when do you think it's possible? Let's talk concrete dates here. We need to figure it out. Am I coming there? Are you coming here? And no, I think Darcy can be a little annoying, but I have to say in this case, she deserves an answer. She's got children. She has feelings involved. She just went over there for what was like a month or whatever. She just wants to make a plan. But Jesse is such a control freak that he cannot bear to have her dictate anything to him. All ideas must come from him first. So she's throwing out ideas and he interrupts with this really rude, "So can I say something or not?" I mean, as soon as that camera crew wasn't there in Amsterdam, he just flipped that switch and let the crazy out, didn't he? So now we're on set and Jesse comes out because he's here on a tourist visa and he tries to pull this nice guy shtick. He comes out, he hugs Sean. My husband, who kind of half watches this show, even like turned his head around and was like, "That guy is such a phony." And he makes sure to look right at Darcy and he says, "I was listening to you." Chills. So flashback to that windmill appreciation posal. And if you look at Darcy while they're watching this, she is cringing. And then you look at Jesse and he's smiling. He's a sociopath too. I am certain of it. He's even posturing on the couch, like in this way to intimidate or take control. He's sitting up, he's leaning forward, and in a way, he's trying to manipulate us into thinking he's smarter than he is. And he says, "I find that the concept of marriage with Darcy, it's not being fully understood. Let's relish in our love." I'm starting to be just as confused as Darcy now. What does that even mean? As soon as Darcy said they want to work through a few of their problems before they get engaged, Jesse starts twitching. So Sean's like, "Okay, well, what are your problems?" And this is where the bleeping started and it got messy. And I know it wasn't just me. I was tweeting during the special and it seems to be the consensus. There was something about, "When things are not real, I will put a mirror to your face." And the word bullshit was bleeped out. And then Darcy got pissed because she felt like she was being portrayed as an alcoholic. And that's not cool, which it isn't if she's not. She said she doesn't drink every day. She didn't even like how she looked on TV after having some wine. So she stopped drinking, lost weight because of it, which she does look good. But when she was in LA with her sister, they had some wine, had some drinks. Then it got more messy. There's bleeping. They're screaming at each other. Jesse's now standing up, physically exerting his dominance over her. And he's saying that she's fucking this relationship up. And you know what? Darcy probably said more in this exchange than she usually does because she had the backup of people around her. And she accuses Jesse of always portraying himself as perfect and that he's always talking over her. And that he feels like she's a liability, like she's stupid, she's a fool, but she knows that she has more to offer. Right there, play that back, Darcy. Order the tape, watch it over and over again. Why are you staying with him? He's not that cute, his job isn't that great, and it only gets worse. It doesn't get better. And then we actually find out that he calls her a bitch fairly often too. And that's never a good sign, the name calling in a relationship. oh, but he said he's sorry, so all's forgiven. So when he apologizes, she's just supposed to forgive and forget, but he can hold all the grudges he wants. Darcy herself is even saying the same thing. It's a cycle. It keeps going over and over again, and that they're not going to solve it today. And then Jesse really loses his shit, like Father Captain Von Trapp before Maria came, and he says, you're proud of yourself, you're fucking up this relationship today, and then boom, well, thanks for joining us today, that's a wrap. Like my head was spinning around, like, are you kidding? Like, we were just get to the good part. So, I don't know, you think TLC channel heads just pulled the plug, like the Jenny Jones, like, we're not going to have this murder go down on our dime. Remember the Jenny Jones murder? We should talk about that. Totally unrelated. Anyway, these two are left on the stage. Everyone leaves and they're looking at each other, and then they get up, walk out hand in hand. That is an emotionally abusive relationship. And I truly, truly hope, all joking aside, that Darcy sees it. And without these filters and Instagram posts and selfies and blinders and House of 11 sponsored ads, she's got to get her life back on track. And with that, we started with a Kevlar vest and ended with a man who needs a straitjacket. Before the 90 days, we will not say goodbye. Just see you again soon. Thanks again for listening today and spreading the word. We're having so much fun in the Welcome to Reality TV Facebook group. You guys are so much fun. I love you. That's on Instagram and Facebook, Welcome to Reality TV. Find me on Twitter at Reality TV Pod. Please rate and leave a review. I'll talk to you very soon, and happy Halloween.